Joyce Otten, and our subject is the funeral, a subject that people don't like to talk about very much. Interestingly, even though the death rate on this planet is 100%, not many people want to get involved in thinking about funerals or things related to funerals or planning funerals. So when the time comes and we have to do this all of a sudden in grief situations, we find ourselves sometimes really, it's harder for us than it needs to be. I'm just curious, can I see a show of hands, how many of you have toured a funeral home when you weren't there to visit someone who died, but you've just gone through and you've seen the funeral home? Good. Good, just about most of you here. And that's why you're here. And that's why all the other people aren't here. You discover that a funeral home is a business, and it's a vital business in that it performs a very necessary and valuable service. You also discover that funeral homes, like other businesses, are not all alike. They don't all offer the same kind of things, not just materially, but in terms of real service to the people who are grieving. Since so many of you have done this, well, we'll move rather quickly into sharing, I think, because I think as we share some of our experiences, we'll also grow. One of the problems that I see is that even though in the church we have so much that is death-related, we have grown so accustomed to it that we hardly hear that, you know, that we're talking about death. When it comes to the funeral, too often all of this is left up to the individual families, or it's left up to the funeral director. And in many churches, there is little or no input by the pastor, by the congregation as a whole, by boards of education, which inform people, which make it possible for people to ask their questions. The fact that you all have, not all, but I think it's almost all, have been inside a funeral home.
Oh, I thought you meant, you said if we had been in, except for, I've been in lots of times with families.
For families. The question I'm asking is, how about touring? How about touring the funeral home? Going and looking at the caskets, deciding, you know, which one has the bottom that goes up and down, and which one has the bottom that may fall out. Okay, finding out about crypts and so forth. Well, all of that part is handled by the funeral home. What part is handled by the church? In many churches, what happens is that someone dies, and after the person has died, the pastor is called, the pastor visits with the family, finds out a few pieces of pertinent information, and thereupon the pastor takes over the funeral. He has a sermon. He may involve or may not involve the family in the picking of some hymns or a text, but the pastor kind of does everything, and the people come. Well, there's not then a lot of involvement of the family in the funeral except as observers. And many people have grown to expect that. The funeral home's going to take care of the physical stuff. The pastor's going to take care of the spiritual stuff. And maybe the ladies' aide will have a dinner. But I think we need to do a little bit more than that. We're going to be talking about what is happening on this occasion. So one of the things that happens is that funerals tear people apart, because people have different ideas about funerals. And now all of a sudden, everybody's deciding in a moment's time things that they have not thought through very carefully. For instance, some people would prefer to be cremated. Some people would prefer in-ground burial. Some people think it's important to spend a fair amount of money on a casket. Some people think that the cheapest casket possible is the way to go. Some people want a cemetery plot, and some people want a mausoleum. When our son died, we talked to the woman at the cemetery, who was called a counselor, and she said, I talk to many people who say it really doesn't matter. Anything is all right. She said, but the minute I say, well, then do you want this? They say, well, no, I really don't think I want that. So they say, well, perhaps you'd like this. Well, no, not that, because people do have some concepts. They do have some ideas. Now, what happens in a family where there are different concepts of the funeral, and now it's time to bury a loved one, and this person wants this, and that person wants that. How do you make the choices under the stress and strain? So it's one of the problems. Another problem has to do with the service itself. Some people would prefer a memorial service after the burial. Some people would prefer a service before the burial. Some people want involvement of family members in the service itself. Some people want an opportunity to talk about the individual at the service itself. Now, if everybody comes with different ideas, what's going to happen? You just have some terrible clashes and people who are torn apart. One thing that I've heard a lot about lately, because I think cremation is becoming more common, that in some instances, a spouse has responsibility for funeral services. And let's say the wife thinks the husband should be cremated. She goes ahead and does this, and you've got mom and dad over here who are horrified, who cannot handle this at all. And that becomes a lifelong problem for them, and how do they deal with the relationship with the surviving spouse, because this happened to the body of their son. Those are just some of the kind of things that we get into. What I thought we'd do today, and I've got some papers here, shall we have two groups or shall we just all stay together? I think we're kind of small. Small enough to stay together, do you think? Here, just kind of pass them down from there, and we'll just start a few here. Take a look at some of these questions. Let's work through some of them together. First one has to do with funeral homes. Somebody read the question aloud. You can read that as well as I can.
Conception nowadays.
I don't know. We've had two good experiences. One with the death of our son, where the funeral director was just, he went above and beyond the call of duty in making things as easy as possible for us, including, I will not forget, his hugging me at the cemetery. He drove Tom's body from, Tom died in Illinois and was buried in Wisconsin. Didn't even charge us extra for that trip up to Milwaukee. And it was very special. When my mother died, we had a woman funeral director who was very concerned about our particular concerns and needs, and very ready to speak to them. So again, it's a business. Like other businesses, you have some good ones and some not good ones. What's the value then in pre-planning?
Well, a larger community, finding a funeral home that will be a service organization rather than a business,
all right,
is one thing.
Sure.
One of the important things is cost. The cost apparently is locked in. We have it. We have pre-need, or whatever they call that.
Yeah.
Also for our cemetery plot. Mm-hmm. In fact, we even have the stone in place.
Mm-hmm.
However, since that time, our particular establishment in which we're investing has been sold to a conglomerate of sorts, and we're beginning to wonder what that might lead to.
Yeah. Can you, in your original contract with cemetery, now I bring this up because a lot of people don't know about this, sometimes the original contract with the cemetery has a clause in it whereby if you move away, and, you know, for instance, we have cemetery lots in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. We live in Michigan. But we did that when our son died because we don't really have a home. And at the time, we knew we weren't going to be staying in Illinois. We thought we need a place that's more permanent, and that was my family home. But there's a clause in the contract that if we should someday decide to move to Seattle, we can swap. You can do a swap and find cemetery lots out here.
Because of the national.
Yes, yes. So that would be a helpful thing. Because those things do change, don't they? Some of us, anyway.
I think this arrangement pre-need also takes care of the arguments that might arise as to which coffin or casket,
yes,
et cetera, et cetera.
Right. You do a favor to family. You do a favor to family.
We bought the second cheapest.
Yeah. The cheapest is pretty sad looking,
yeah,
isn't it?
Right.
Or at least some people think so.
When my mother died, my brother, who was on furlough from India as a missionary, was home at the time. And in India, they have far different practices than in the United States. So he was there, and I wasn't there. You know, I was hundreds of miles away. And I was really shocked when I saw the coffin that he and my sister had chosen. It was the cheapest possible one. Looked like a wood box with a cloth cover. And I didn't say anything, but it was a big disappointment to me.
Yeah, there come to be all kinds of questions in there in terms of respect.
The remedy for that is the pall, the funeral pall.
Mm-hmm.
Then they all look alike.
Mm-hmm. How many churches, how many people here come from churches where there is a funeral pall? There are some.
But would they use that in a funeral home? Would they use the pall?
Yes.
You know, I'm for them to be buried and have a funeral service from the church if they've been active members in the church. But there are some that don't do that. They do have a funeral from the home.
Mm-hmm.
Can they use the pall right in the home?
Fred, you answered that, didn't you?
They can use it in the funeral, in the chapel, in the funeral chapel, but I don't think they use it at the cemetery. They haven't been our way anymore.
No, well, they don't think so. Kind of like a cloth cover that a drape that drapes so over. Usually has.
You take the flowers. You don't have the flowers. You can choose the, and it usually has maybe it's the color of the season, or it has a cross across the top of it.
Anybody want to talk about expense while we're talking about the funeral home? You gave out a figure here. Does anybody else have some other figures that you're aware of in terms of cost of funeral?
Cremation is much, much cheaper.
Cremation is a lot less expensive.
Yeah, I think we had only about $500 for our son when he was cremated.
Mm-hmm.
And that depends on whether you buy a casket to take. You know, you don't have to buy a casket.
Mm-hmm.
And we just used whatever they called it, a table at the funeral home, because we did not take them to the church. We had a memorial service at the church, but we had a viewing at the funeral home, and we just had them on what they called the table.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a nice looking, looked like a casket, and it was
mm-hmm.
nice looking. And I think it was only $500.
I'm glad you mentioned it, because many people don't know that if you are going to be involved with cremation, that you can have a visitation with the body present. Many people think that if you're going to have cremation, you never see the body after the person dies. But it is very possible to do that.
Isn't there a law that must be done within the first 24 hours or something?
I don't think you have to. Ours probably was, because we worked really rapidly. Let's see, died on Tuesday. With the viewing on Wednesday, I guess. But I don't think you have to. I think
but then you'd have to have the body embalmed.
I think
the expense.
I think the embalming be my guess, too, that if you were going over 24 hours, that the embalming would probably be required. But I don't know what that would add to the expense, or if it would
know.
Or not.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
But I think another point is, when you talk about viewing, I have found that, I know of a family that would not let the body be viewed.
Mm-hmm.
And this was very devastating, maybe not for the immediate. It was for the people that came from out of town.
Mm-hmm.
It was for, that was probably the ones that I heard the most complaints from,
mm-hmm.
but they felt bad. They felt that if there wasn't any final goodbye given,
mm-hmm.
and it was hard on the family that came from out of town when they couldn't view the body.
Yes, it's an interesting thing, this business about viewing the body. When our son died, we had decided that that wasn't necessary. And so we went to the funeral home, we made the arrangements, and he asked about viewing the body, and we said no. And we came home, and we had four other kids at home. And as soon as they heard that, they said, "You can't do that to us, and you can't do that to Tom's friends." And so we were immediately told we had made a major error, and so immediately called the funeral home and said, "We've changed our minds." And I've always been grateful for our kids teaching us in that way, because I think that was a very important thing, not only for Tom's friends, but also for us. I think we needed to do that. When my mother died recently, my brother was quite adamant before the funeral, before her death, really. We're not going to have anybody looking at her. Coffin's going to be closed. And I said, "Well, you know, Mom has all this stuff written out about her funeral." And he says, "Well, whatever she wrote years ago and doesn't apply anymore." And I said, "That's probably true." I said, "But shall we go open it?" And he said, "Well, not before she dies." Well, Mom had written out a lot of things that we really did not do because they were no longer appropriate. But she was very obviously planning on having her body viewed and in a casket, et cetera. And I think that's one of the things that helped him. So he finally came to the point of saying, "All right, well, have it open, but I'm not coming until it's closed." And I said, "Well, that's fine. You do what you have to do." Well, I think he was one of the first people there. So I think what I'm saying is that these things happen to people, and we're trying to move through these things, and at a time when it's very difficult to do so. And that's why, to me, it's very important that people give thought to this in advance. I always like the story of Phil's dad. Phil's dad and Mom were driving somewhere, and we're in Toledo, Ohio, which was a long way from home, when Phil's dad had a stroke. And they were sitting in a parking lot, I think, of a McDonald's, if I remember rightly. And she was going to go in for help, but before she did, she said, "Well, Daddy, where do you want to be buried?" You know, and I thought, this is no time to discuss this, you know. So those kind of things we'd be best off dealing with in advance.
On the matter of viewing, yeah.
Yes.
I much prefer having the viewing prior to the service. Mm-hmm. It seems to me that just makes it much more of a celebration. Mm-hmm. This parading by afterwards, I think, is rather regrettable.
Okay. Many places do that. Does anybody have a different feeling on that?
The very worst I had at one time was a poor man that had lost his wife, and he went by and he just broke down.
Yes.
Publicly, everybody there. Then they took his body clear up toward Mount Rainier on the side of the mountain, and they said, "Oh, there's some people here that haven't seen her yet." So they opened up the casket out there in the bright sun.
Yes.
And this poor fellow had to go by another time for final farewells. And
yeah, they wouldn't do it that way.
A very ghastly memory in my book.
Yes. So that there can be some traumatic things that happen. Yeah. We have been hitting on this a little bit in number two. There's pre-planning includes such things as viewing and embalming. Do we want that or not? Casket selection. We've talked about that. Choice between cremation, in-ground burial, or mausoleum. Decisions about vaults and cemetery lots, urns, or where to scatter ashes. I think maybe rather than deal with the questions that follow, may I ask you about your decision to have cremation? You want to tell us a little bit of some of the things you went through before you made that choice.
Well, we've decided that we want to be cremated and then have a memorial service for one another.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why we decided this, just probably from the monetary side of it, that why throw a lot of money into something?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, after all, I would suppose that a funeral is for those that are left, not for mm-hmm. the one that's gone.
That's right.
Well, we it was hard. We had lost two children, and we didn't cremate them. And then our third son, we did. And part of the reason that we did was because he had just, he was older, he was 32, but he'd always said, if I ever die, just take my ashes and throw them out at the cabin. We have a cabin. And so that's what we decided. I mean, it seemed to be the logical thing to do. But the one thing that I wanted to make comment on, we had planned on taking, it says scatters ashes. Well, we had planned on scattering them at the cabin. But we have the cabin with another family. And the man in the other family said, I can't handle that. He said, Sam's ashes can go to the cabin, that's fine. But he said, I would prefer that they were just kept in the box. Or that's what he wanted. He wanted a certain spot, which was, you know, it didn't matter to us one way or the other. So they weren't scattered. They were kept in the original box and planted, kind of. But he is at the cabin.
Was your son Mary?
No.
Okay, so it was all right for you to make these choices. Mm-hmm. You didn't have a problem with it. Yes.
One thing I discovered recently that never occurred to me, a pastor in Portland lost his wife in an auto accident. She was quite young. And he had her ashes scattered over the Pacific. Mm-hmm. Then he had such a sense of loss, he felt it necessary to drive down to the coast and have his communion with her out there somewhere. Mm-hmm. I think in that case, maybe a burial site would have made more sense. Has that feeling.
We do.
A situation where the family decided, or the father had decided previously to be cremated, and ashes just scattered any old place. He was not a church member any place, and no service was planned. There was nothing planned except the cremation and the scattering of the ashes. And the family felt that that isn't enough, that they actually went out and bought a cemetery lot and scattered the ashes on that lot, so that they would have a place. You know.
Mm-hmm. I hear you.
People are different. Mm-hmm. People have different needs. Mm-hmm. Some people do have a need to have a localized place, a cemetery to go to and visit on a regular basis. Some people don't seem to have that particular need. Is there a right or wrong about any of these things? Somebody thinks so?
I think it's partly your reasons why. Some people have maybe pretty poor theology of this, and others I think are valid either way.
Can we talk about the theology of this?
What's the? It's the partly this that no matter what, there will be the resurrection, and God is able to perform that in God's own way. I think that the point at which I have questions is when some people have such a poor estimate of themselves and of the body that they speak negatively about cremation and choose it for that reason.
I would agree with that. Yeah.
I think in the Midwest, I had to go through all this just to have my mother go to a nursing home. And I had to make arrangements with the funeral parlor in Illinois because we have a family lot in Wisconsin. So I had to deal with two funeral parlors. You know. But I think in the Midwest, we still have more room for this. But I understand that down in Florida, there just isn't space. You know, so I think it's the part of the country we live in.
Okay, that's a valid concern, isn't it? In many places where it's very difficult to bury people. In Louisiana, all burials are above ground. I mean, there is no way you're going to bury somebody in the ground. So.
Yeah, many places now on top of each other.
Mm-hmm. Did anybody in this group learn like I did when I was taught that cremation was a sinful thing to do? Because it was an attempt to get around God and an attempt to make the resurrection impossible.
I think I used to think that, you know, that.
Yeah.
And if people use it for that reason, you know, to defy God raising me up with a glorious body. But, you know, I've thought of that about a lot, and I think it's quite all right, you know, if that's the way people want to do it.
What about having an intellectual assent? Cremation is fine. That's a possibility. But having your gut say, yeah, but I want to be buried in the ground. You think that's all right, too?
I'm sure a lot of people feel like that.
Sure.
Why not?
Sure. Why not is right. We're all different again. Yeah. And we do respond out of our gut a lot of times. And he had me say, yeah, that I can handle that. You got this argument going on inside. Well, yeah, but I can't really. You know, well, then that's all right. You know, so there's all kinds of different methods. Anybody here want to talk about the arrangements they made? We did have some of that already. You talked about making your arrangements, did you not? Or at least you have let each other know.
We've come to a decision between ourselves. Mm-hmm. I didn't say that we've made any arrangements. Mm-hmm.
And you have
we have a contract that you we're have paying so much a month on.
Mm-hmm.
We're almost finished with it.
Mm-hmm.
There is a book, by the way, on... oh my, I just had the tip of my tongue. I just borrowed from the Boston General Library in back east. Warning you that you better be sure that the contract is safe and valid and legally okay, because you could be rooked.
Yes.
You could be tied into something that you don't want to be tied into later.
You can also make arrangements with a funeral home and pay nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean,
just the plan.
This is if I die, this is what I want. Mm-hmm. You know, and just leave that there. You can do that too.
40 years ago, we bought lots.
Mm-hmm.
10 years ago, we decided we wanted to go a little farther with a vault and stone and all.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, they were opening a new part of the cemetery, which is a memorial-type cemetery. And so we traded two lots and bought a lawn crypt. And we were just back there this last year, and they do have it all in with our stone and everything. But now also, this last year, we've been talking about going a little farther with the planning, mm-hmm. the picking the casket and that sort of thing. We have not made that decision yet.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's difficult if you don't know where you'll be, really.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
I mean, the way we move around nowadays, right. especially when you're retired.
Mm-hmm. You know. Our mobile society does create some problems there, unless we are really positive that we are going to stay in the same place.
After going through all of this, we had moved to another church and discovered we could have been buried for free in the church cemetery.
So now what do you do?
They can have somebody else in there.
Okay. Let's move on to the next one. Occasionally, a church will encourage members to make their wishes about funeral services known in advance to their pastors. What's your attitude about the practice? If you've done this, what kind of plans did you make? Where are your plans filed? Who knows about them? We had an instance a few years ago where a couple from our church was traveling, and they were, I think, in Tennessee or someplace. We're from Michigan, and they had an auto accident in which the husband died, and the wife was seriously injured. And no one in the family had any idea what their wishes were. We had funeral for the husband while the wife was in the hospital in another place. And the kids were asking us, what do you think? You know, so we were making choices about funeral home, what have you, for people that we didn't really know whether they would like this or not. So these are some possibilities.
I can't think of the name of it, but in our area there is some company or some, I don't think you call it a company, but they are going around, and she's also talking about the prepaid, but what she's doing is taking all this information, and it's on file, everything, your social security number, everything. And it's there available on a 24-hour basis that if anybody needs it in the hospital or any place. So that is, I can't think of the name of the...
I don't know a name of it either, but I do know that when someone dies, there's a list of questions about that long, you know, including grandpa's middle name.
And it's all recorded, and we did fill that out. So it's,
Yes.
Well, at least the law now requires that every item is specified for cost individually. You don't just have big packages anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably an advantage, or it's a nuisance.
Mixed bag, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some churches do have on record some of the things that, you know, pre-planned funerals sort of.
Right, what kind of things do churches have on record? What kind of things would you leave with your church?
Probably where you want to be buried. What do you want, cremation or otherwise?
Mm-hmm.
And some probably even as much as, I know my mother, she didn't have it done with the church, but she had her hymns picked out and her pallbearers. One problem, most of them died before she did. But
yeah, that happened with my mother's list of yeah. pallbearers too.
But everything. Yeah. And, you know, all those things can be done if you want to do them in advance.
Yes.
But is there a church? I haven't been in any church that keeps those records.
I haven't either.
Is there any church that
does? How many pastors do we have here? One, two, three, four pastors. How many of you keep records like this?
We have about four of them on file right now.
You know, one Lent season I sent out a 2-page letter about funeral practices, etc., and a worksheet that has all these questions with spaces to fill in front and back side.
Mm-hmm.
And I sent it out to everyone in the congregation and suggesting, you know, that people make some plans, because I had some where there were no plans made, and well, let's just take care of that. I got one back.
One back. One back.
Yeah.
Okay. And you got four in a congregation of how many?
Well, this is over a period of years, a congregation of about 700 baptized.
Mm-hmm. So it's not a common practice. Now, you guys don't have any, right?
That's right. Although we had given out sheets of mm-hmm. suggested information you might fill in a Bible class situation mm-hmm. one time. I didn't ask for them back.
Yeah.
Just for their own help.
Yeah.
I think anything like that's helpful, an information page and suggestions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we lead tours.
I'd kind of like to see copies of his form.
We lead tours, and I have a form that they fill out as to medications and case and whom to notify and mm-hmm. on, down. And certainly a church could do that very easily.
Mm-hmm.
I need to know if they die, what do they want me to do with them?
Yes.
On a trip.
Okay. So what information besides that which is needed by the funeral home, what are some of the questions you have on yours?
Oh, things have to do with people to contact, pallbearers, hymns to use, scripture lesson preferences. And in part of the back side, I have a list of possible hymn selections. Not that they're limited to that, but when you have to pick something out, it's, oh, let's see, my mind's all of a sudden a blank.
And Rock of Ages.
And some of them are listed by seasons of the year.
Yes.
I have some biblical passages listed. And there's things that are needed for the permanent records. Where was the person born and the date of birth and addresses and things like that. Baptismal date.
Hmm.
Yeah, things like that.
I would think that would be very helpful. I find it really sad that you only got one back.
Yeah.
Maybe you ought to send it out every year and until you get some more. Why do you think the picking of hymns is important? You don't need to answer that unless you want to. But
well, it's an expression of faith.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what people remember about a service, what hymns were sung.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you can avoid a few bad ones. You don't like Beyond the Sunset or whatever.
Can we guess? Shall we gather at the river?
Yeah, right.
See, I haven't heard those in years. Thanks.
Still around.
we hardly ever have any hymns if the service is in the funeral home.
Mm-hmm.
Only if the service is in the church.
Why do you suppose that is?
It's a lot easier for the funeral chapel.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and it's cheaper. Because if you're going
to... You have to carry boxes of hymnals.
Carrying boxes of hymnals is difficult.
Because they have soloists, don't they?
Yes, but soloists cost money.
Even those now,
yeah.
But again, we're fortunate they'll still let us use the soloist, and we can still sing hymns. And, but again, I know that probably is unrealistic in a lot of places. And you can mimeograph or photocopy the hymns.
Mm-hmm. We did that for Joyce's mother's funeral earlier this year. I mimeographed a page with a hymn and the 23rd Psalm, which she had wanted, read in the Lord's Prayer. I distributed these, and the organist was very happy to play the song.
And talk about that funeral just a little bit, because we did that differently than most of the funerals I'm familiar with. There were some reasons for that that had to do some with some personality conflicts, let's put it that way, whatever. We chose for Phil to be the presiding pastor instead of her pastor. And I also participated as a speaker in the funeral, so that he spoke and I spoke. And then we gathered, those present gathered in a circle, and he asked if anybody else wanted to speak, and other people spoke. It was a very informal funeral in that sense, but one that I treasure, because there were opportunities for people to say things that were helpful for me as a survivor to hear, and there was an opportunity for me to express myself, and at that point I very much needed to. What do you think about that? What do you think about other people besides the pastor participating in the funeral or even taking it over?
I think about eight years ago, because we had moved, I really changed my thinking on this after a conference. And we have made all of our funerals now so much more informal, even using the LBW order of service. You can do that. I believe there's theologically valid reason for people to say, you know, after there has been the introductory sermon remarks, a valid place for people to speak things that they treasure about the witness of the person who died. And I think there's all kinds of reasons to do that.
I think it's helpful, but I said that. How about somebody else?
One pastor that we heard recently is quite good at this, that he gets family together, mm-hmm. and he says, tell me about Dad. What do you remember about him? Did he have a sense of humor? Did he have a favorite Bible? Did he ever quote Bible passages? What kind of a person was he? And then he incorporates that into his message in a very fine way. Mm-hmm. I recall this last one. I heard someone going out, that pastor really knew her, didn't he, or him? Mm-hmm. So much better than, I had one case where a widow, she said, now, I realize that you didn't know him very well, but I don't want you to say that in a sermon. I didn't know so very well, but. She didn't want to hear that.
Okay. Mm. The other comments about that kind of, you know, different practices at the funeral itself, would it bother anybody?
Well, I'd have to think about it, because I think of the service as a worship service. And as the basic message of the worship service is God and God's work of salvation. And I do what I can to avoid having the worship service, having that attention distracted from God by a bride and groom, or by prolonged focus or lingering on the deceased. Obviously, let's say the couple is there to get married, we're here to bury this person, but it's like I don't tell this to survivors, but I tell it to bride and grooms when they come in. I say, I don't do weddings. We do a worship service in which two people do happen to get married. It's not the same worship service as Sunday morning, but it's a worship service. And so I work hard to have funerals, have the burial of the dead from the church building, where we are surrounded by the symbols of the faith, where the practice of communion is can be carried out. So I kind of shy away from a focus on the person.
Okay.
I went to a funeral once. It was not in a Lutheran church, and it was a prominent person within the community, and the church was just packed with flowers, and the it wasn't a sermon, it was just a eulogy of how great this person was.
Okay.
And I did not like that. I did not think that's what we should have been there for.
We're not saved by our greatness.
No. And that was all, you know, it was just all how good he was and what he did.
Yeah. There's a difference then, isn't there, between a eulogy and a service.
Right.
So we're getting into the last question, I think, on here, which is what makes the service Christian. You want to respond to anything he said?
Yeah, I think I'd like to, because I can speak from my own practice. I used to feel very strongly that the funeral was my responsibility, the sermon, the service, working with them on the hymns and the like. The reason that changed is because at this conference, the speaker pretty much convinced me that if this person has been a Christian, there have been people who have been touched by that person, and they may want to write a kind of a closing paragraph about that relationship, and this also can be to God's glory. And it's an honoring of the one who died as a Christian. Do it for a lot of other services, but for the services in our church and in the chapel where they have been Christians, I think there's a valid place for this. Some places, I think, where the service is much more formal, it probably wouldn't fit in very well.
But it could be done afterwards in an informal arrangement where their close friends and the family could be together. Mm-hmm. Because we've done that.
Or it could be printed. When my mother-in-law died, my husband went and they asked him to say some words, at the service, which I thought was fine. I think just so you don't get it carried lopsided and have a lot of so much of that, but I think a little of that would be fine.
Yeah, I served a parish in Pennsylvania for 6 years where the whole community turned out for the visitation at the funeral home. 2-3 days, and the family was there for all the hours of visitation that were posted, and much of that took place there, as well as the funeral dinner afterwards. And when I came out to Seattle, and the first funeral I had, I had to find out right away, now which funeral home are we working with? And I called them up and said, what are visitation hours? And I was going to buzz. Well, I did. I went right down there. First, when they opened up, I was going to meet the family and everything. I was the only one there. I was the only one there for a long time. The family wasn't there. Other people didn't show up. And where is everybody? Oh, well, they don't come by here. Why even have visitation? And that deprives an opportunity of much of this sharing.
Yes. There are differences, I think, by parts of the country and by communities that we have encountered as we've lived in one place and then in another, that practices vary. And I know when we lived in Texas, the practice was to sit in the home with the family. They stayed with the family at the home, and visitation pretty well happened there. In Milwaukee, where my mother was buried, I don't know if any funerals are conducted from churches today. They have a practice in Milwaukee of having the visitation at night, on the night before the burial. And when the visitation happens, at the end of the visitation is the service. And then nobody comes back for the committal service except the immediate family. You get a handful of people out at the cemetery on the following day. And as far as I know, that practice started in the 60s when there were race riots. And there were problems with people going into some communities at night for visitations, etc. And I don't know, it seems like that's where they got that thing going. And I don't know if anyone has the honor today in Milwaukee of having a church funeral. They may. I'd like to hear about it.
But sometimes there's parking problems.
Parking problems.
On a prominent corner.
Yeah. See, a lot of the old churches in Milwaukee never had any parking lots. You know, you parked, you'd walk sometimes up and down the streets long distance. So.
Well, some funeral directors collect an extra fee if they have to haul the casket to the church.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's pretty common.
Yeah, Pennsylvania, and then I tried it here, but there's so many in the Seattle area. Just, you know, it's kind of.
Yeah.
But in Pennsylvania, I went around and visited with them and. Do you or don't you? And the fellow who did most of the funerals was a real devout Roman Catholic person, and he too was urging families, encouraging them to have the services at the sanctuary. And part of the way in which he encouraged them was not to charge an extra fee for that transportation.
Yeah.
Yes. One comment is going to make that hadn't been talked about when we talk about funeral. Morticians, the mortician, if you're a Christian and you have a Christian mortician, you are lucky. I mean, that is a very big advantage, because I think that the Christian mortician can relate much more to where you're at if you are a Christian. And it's really, I don't know if you can go ahead, if you're pre-planning, if you can ask him if he's a Christian before you. You know, I suppose it depends on what kind of choices you have. In most smaller towns, you have one mortician, and that's what you usually use. But certainly they are great when they also come from a Christian orientation.
Makes a difference to the family. But sometimes even it works the other way. I think tell you about that briefly. That I mentioned that I spoke at my mother's funeral. What I talked about, as my mother was dying and I sat in her room, I was almost constant. I have that where a Bible passage or a hymn line for days or weeks or sometimes months will just constantly be there. And as I was sitting in her room, the passage that was there all the time was, "There is forgiveness with thee, that thou mayest be feared." And my mother was an interesting lady, a very strong-willed lady who had made a lot of enemies, including in the family. And I spent a lot of time thinking about what that meant in terms of the forgiveness that I needed because of some of the relationship problems that had been there, the forgiveness that I believe she needed, the forgiveness we felt between each other, you know, and I really had given a lot of thought to that. So it was something that I really wanted to talk about at her funeral, because I knew I was not the only one who had been having problems along this line, and I wanted that strong reminder not only of God's forgiveness for us, but of forgiveness. My mom's way of expressing forgiveness wasn't as easy to see, but it was there. Okay, she always let me back in the door. so I wanted that to be known. After the funeral, the funeral director came up to me and hugged me and said, "I believe God really meant for me to be here today. My mother died 2 years ago today, and she was apparently a person like your mother, and I've needed to hear what you said ever since she died." So it made me feel kind of good to hear that there had been a further purpose for all of this, you know, that God had acted in that way too. I think I'm hearing from both here and here that when we have other people besides the pastor talking, the pastor loses control of the service, right? And some things may happen in there that we really are not real happy about. Am I kind of paraphrasing you correctly there?
Well, I wasn't thinking so much of the element, say, of control, you could call it that, right? It's who's going to say what and direct our attention where, and is it appropriate to a worship service, or is it better done at gatherings before or afterwards?
Mm-hmm. That's always a problem, isn't it? I don't know what to do about that. Is it more appropriate before and after? What's the service that's happening in all of this? What do you think is the service that's happening in a funeral service?
Are you talking about the worship part or the service to the family or what?
Any part at all that you want to comment on.
Okay, I still remain in control, and in the lessons and in the hymns, or if there are no hymns, in the music, the good news about God's action in death is spoken. I always do that. But I do exercise some control over how I introduce the rest and how I invite it, what it is that they are free to do. Sometimes there is nobody who speaks. Sometimes there are two or three. I've never found it to be where there's too many saying gushy stuff.
Question, do you solicit them, the speakers, or do you take them if they're volunteer?
I say this to the family ahead of time and announce it as the service begins and repeat it briefly at the beginning of my sermon.
So that people have that opportunity. It's an interesting thing to look at. I hear what you're saying, and I hear what you're saying, and I think that's something that maybe we need to talk more about. Maybe if more people other than the pastor thought that they were likely to have to say something at a funeral, or at least have the privilege of saying something from the funeral, might they do some thinking of another kind, do you think, that we don't give them opportunity for? Is that a possibility?
And they'd also be part of their working out their grief.
Yes. Yes.
For a son or a daughter to speak is such a wholesome thing.
I agree with you. It's part of working out the grief.
Lois's sister was murdered down in L.A. The family prepared a little statement that was printed, and her stepmother put something more or less into poetry, and that was also read. That was made it quite personal. However, they had requested two things. Number one, a forgiveness for the murderer. They wanted to be very clear that they were not vindictive. And then secondly, the idea that this was not to be a eulogizing of the person, even though she had been church secretary on the board of trustees, probably worked harder down at that church than anybody else had in years. That was just passed over. It wasn't mentioned at all. It seemed a little bit too a grave omission almost. Since that time, they put a mural on the side of the school and recognizing the service that was rendered. One gets mixed reactions either way.
Does anybody know what happens at the funeral of a pastor?
Which one?
Yes. What I have in mind is he served congregations, so and so many souls baptized, so and so many confirmations.
I refused to count for that very reason. I couldn't tell you. Good.
I didn't know I was supposed to be counting.
Yeah.
Have you heard that at pastor's funerals? Yes.
Yeah, I don't think it's
done. I did a couple of times.
Not so very much.
Oh, boy.
Well, one that's still fresh in my mind is Marty Werfelman, where this was such a service of praise and celebration in the hymns and the music. And
praise of him or praise of God?
Praise of God.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any other comments?
Well, you asked the purpose of the service.
Yes.
Certainly comfort.
Yes.
Right? Instruction. Maybe a little evangelizing, carefully. You've got a captive audience. It really isn't fair now. I've heard resentment at that.
Yes,
and even an altar call. I've been at outside services, an altar call at the end.
Yeah.
That didn't go over very well with me.
Yeah. Anybody else want to comment on what they think the purpose of this service is?
I think a lot depends on who you are and what you believe.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you're a Christian and you recognize what Christ has done for you, I think your outlook on death is far different than somebody who is just, you know, is not a believer, and this is the end, and we got to say something good about the person. I think it depends on who you are and what you believe.
You've got to hear about the resurrection. You know, I think that's something you ought to hear.
The resurrection. Okay.
We went to a funeral one time for a person that wasn't Christian, and it was conducted by the Elks. And that was the most miserable thing that I've ever seen. It was the end. There was no hope for anything. They just got up there, a series of men, and said what a great person he was. But there was no hope for any future. He's gone now.
Okay, so hope is something that's important at a funeral, at a Christian funeral.
Sure.
That we hear that message of hope. Were you going to say something?
I'm disagreeing.
Oh, okay.
What about apparently a growing custom? In our paper, very often lately, I've seen there will be no service as requested by the deceased. Mm-hmm. Is that growing everywhere? I don't know.
I see that every once in a while in our paper.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Graveside services is more and more common.
Oh.
What do you think is the reason for that?
I don't know. Expression of unbelief, I suspect.
I'm not sure. It could be. I think one of the things that comes to mind for me is, and I want to go back to comments I have heard. Well, I don't want to be that trouble to you. Just throw me in the ground, any old place. Get rid of my body. It doesn't matter. You know, and it does matter. And I think one of the reasons that people say that is because we have not told them how important the funeral is in terms of closure for the survivors. The survivors need that opportunity to say goodbye, to mark that, to celebrate that life, which was a God-given life. Certainly we want our attention directed to what God has done. One of the things God has done is to give us that person to love and cherish during their lifetime. And certainly there's nothing wrong about saying we felt that this was a wonderful gift of God, and these are some of the reasons. I don't see any problem with that. But I think maybe one of the reasons, financial reasons, and somebody mentioned here, put it in terms of low self-esteem, or I don't know who said that before, that I don't matter. Nobody's going to care about me. But oh boy, I think it's I'm sure there must probably be some people that absolutely nobody cares about, but I think that must be very rare. Even the people who have been very antagonistic in a lifetime are loved by someone, or have affected someone so that they want to talk about that. I think comfort, somebody mentioned comfort here, I think comfort is an essential. I think closure is an essential. I think hope is an essential. Who's got some other ones that are?
I liked your comment, celebrate life, because I've seen several memorial services now, and that's been, you know, on the front of the memorial thing. We'll celebrate the life of so-and-so.
Yes.
Which is neat.
Yes, that person was God's gift to us. How do some of the rest of you feel about using the service for evangelism purposes, since that was brought up? Does anybody have a comment about that?
Well, it seems to me there's a very clear opportunity to say specifically what our Christian hope is, mm-hmm. and to couch that in such terms that it's an invitation to people. Count on this. Here's the chance for you to count on this too.
Mm-hmm. Some people may never be in a church otherwise.
No, that's right.
In a service.
Yeah, yeah.
Lois was reminding me just now, we had a young fellow in my former church who committed suicide, about 17 years of age or whatever. And of course, something like that attracts a full church of young people. Well, the pastor did a masterful job of pointing out, number one, what this fellow did was not okay, people. This was not all right. Just be clear on that. That's all he said about it, and then went on. And then he explained, how are we saved? And if we have troubles, how do we handle those? The close of the service, the parents that had arranged for some counselors of young people to be there in the chapel afterwards. There were refreshments, but in about 10 minutes they say, drift back in here. If you have problems dealing with this or your own life, you can get some help today. And I thought that was magnificent. Furthermore, in the bulletin itself, there was a statement printed by the parents. I had confirmed the couple, as incidentally, both of them, and expressing their faith, their confidence, their hope, and so on. And again, advice to the young people, take your problems to the Lord, and help is available, and so forth. I thought it was just handled greatly.
The idea of having counselors is certainly the idea of providing a service for survivors. And I think that's something I'd not ever thought about before, but particularly in a situation that's very difficult, because death is difficult for all people, but we need some help. Okay, there was somebody over here was going to say something. I guess our 5 o'clock time is here, and it's time for us to close.
Well, maybe your last question on here. What do you think makes a funeral or burial service Christian? Maybe you give us the answer.
No, I'm not the answer giver. I have some ideas like you have some ideas. But some of the things I mentioned, I think, as they are part of that service, are helpful not only in the marking, celebrating the life, marking the closure, but helping the survivors take that first step towards living again.